This new chapter is on the way that reactants and products are balanced with each other in chemical reactions, which is something known as stoichiometry. And before we do a chemical example, I want to take a practical example to try to emphasize what's the whole deal about this mole concept. So let's say, for example, that we want to make grilled cheese sandwiches. And maybe because lunch is coming up, that shouldn't be the thing we were talking about. It was either that or Oreo cookies. I thought grilled cheese sandwiches would maybe make you less hungry. Why am I choosing such an example? Well, because most of us, if we have the idea of what a sandwich is, we would take two pieces of bread and put something in between it. I just chose cheese because I thought that might be a bit friendlier to the vegetarian crowd. And if we went to the grocery store, we would buy a pack of cheese and a loaf of bread. Of course, there's another example of balance right there. I'm sure if you get a pack of cheese that's already sliced up, it's not going to be the right number of slices to match up with the number of pieces of bread. But that's a different issue that we'll tackle in the future. So suppose that I tell you that the loaf of bread has a mass of, let's say, 100 grams. I don't know what it would be in real life, but let's just say it was 100 grams. And let's say that the cheese had a mass of 50 grams. How many sandwiches could we make out of that? You're all giving me that look. Is it because I'm using the example of sandwiches instead of something chemical, or is there something that I'm not telling you that you need to know? Yeah.
It depends on the slice,
right? Right. How thick is your slice? How much does each slice have in terms of mass? So, yeah, I've given you masses of things that are put together, but that doesn't tell you how many pieces of bread you have, how many pieces of cheese that you have. That's the same thing that happens if you end up putting molecules together. So the parallel here of two slices of bread going with a piece of cheese is, what if you got two slices of hydrogen then going with a piece of oxygen? I could tell you that you've got 10 grams of hydrogen and 20 grams of oxygen, but that's not going to let you figure out how many molecules or moles of water that you're going to be able to form, because how many hydrogens are there present in that 10 grams? How many oxygens are present in that 20 grams? And that's the whole point of what the mole concept is. If I hadn't said this before, then sorry if I'm repeating, but this is a really important principle in terms of chemical reactions. Chemical reactions occur on the basis of numbers. Not mass. And that's what we mean when we write out a chemical reaction equation. So if I wanted to make water from hydrogen and oxygen gases, here is the type of equation I could write out. That if I take two molecules of hydrogen, which occur in gas form, and if I take a molecule of oxygen, which also occurs in gas form, and I allow those to react, it's going to end up forming two molecules of water, which at room temperature is going to be at liquid form. So let me explain a little bit about this equation that I just wrote out, especially if you've not had any chemistry before. On the left-hand side, we have the reagents or reactants, the things that are going to react. On the right-hand side, we have the products. That's the way that an equation is normally written. In simpler types of reactions, it's almost always a forward arrow that's used to show the transformation from reactants to products. Later on, we'll talk about the fact that there are some different arrows that we can use. But we're starting out with simple reactions first, so for right now, it's always reactants, an arrow, and then products. There's Well, actually, before I get to that, let me write down what I said a little bit more about mass. And let me write a bit about this example of making sandwiches. Suppose you were given the task of making grilled cheese sandwiches. And you were given 100 grams of bread and 50 grams of cheese. You know that there is a ratio of 2 pieces of bread per piece of cheese. But without knowing how much mass was in each slice of bread or how much mass was in each slice of cheese, you wouldn't be able to figure out how many sandwiches could be made. So then the similar situation in a chemical reaction is what I've got in this equation here. So the way we reread the equation is that 2 units of hydrogen, 2 molecules of hydrogen, react with 1 oxygen, in this case to form 2 waters. So similarly, if you knew 2 molecules of hydrogen reacted with 1 molecule of oxygen to make water, if you were given, let's say, 20 grams of hydrogen and 20 grams of oxygen, you wouldn't know how much water could be made unless you knew how many molecules of hydrogen there were and how many molecules of oxygen there were. In other words, you have to convert from mass to a number. And that's why I started out by saying that chemical reactions happen on the basis of numbers, not mass. Well, a mole is a number. And I know some of you might have been confused. How come we haven't used this number 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd yet? Because in real life, we don't count how many individual molecules there are. That's a huge number. So just like we have the word pair or the word dozen, we have the word mole, which means this certain number. Big number, 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd. And since a mole is a number, we can use moles in figuring out how much product is going to be made in a chemical reaction. So that's exactly what this chapter is about, is coming up with ways to convert from mass into moles of a particular reagent, and then we can use that in order to figure out how much product that could be made. Or another twist on the problem. Let's say that we knew how much hydrogen that we had. What if we wanted to figure out how much oxygen is needed in order to fully react and get water? We could use the same equation because it gives us the balance of all the reactants and all the products. And so that's what we're going to be working on in Chapter 5. Now, let's go back to this chemical reaction, because there's one thing that's occurred in here, which is that I've balanced out the numbers of atoms that are reacting. On the left-hand side, you have H2, which is a molecule, two hydrogens per unit per molecule, and I've got the number 2 in front of it. So what's the difference between the number after the hydrogen and the number before the hydrogen? Well, the number after the hydrogen, since it's written down below the line, we know that's part of the chemical formula. And those numbers don't change unless some chemical reaction happens. The number that goes in front tells you how much or how many units of that substance react. So if we're balancing equations, we don't ever mess with the numbers that are on the right. We don't mess with the numbers that are part of the chemical formula. We can mess with the numbers that go in front, the ones that tell us how many units of that formula that we're going to use. And so if we take the 2 that's in front and multiply it by the 2 that's part of the formula, we have a total of 4 hydrogens that are on the left. Well, law of conservation of mass tells us we have to have the same amount of stuff on the right-hand side. And not just that, we have to have the same number of atoms on the right-hand side. Well, there's 2 hydrogens per unit of water, and so if we multiply that by the 2 that's in front, that gets us 4 also. So we have 4 hydrogens on one side, 4 hydrogens on the other. That balances out. What about oxygen? Well, on the left-hand side, it comes in pairs because oxygen occurs naturally as a molecule as well. So we've only got 1 O2 on the left, but that means there's 2 atoms of oxygen on the left. On the right, there's 1 atom of oxygen per water, and I've got a 2 in front of that. So that means there's a total of 2 oxygens on the right-hand side as well. So this chemical equation is totally balanced. So before we get even more into stoichiometry, let me do a quick example of balancing a chemical reaction. Now, the process of balancing a chemical reaction can be a little bit of guesswork at first, but we're only going to be limited to simpler types of reactions initially. As we keep going through the course, we'll encounter some other types of reactions that are a little bit more systematic in terms of how we balance out equations. For example, have you ever heard of acids and bases before? Acids and bases tend to react according to a very well-known ratio. So those end up being easier reactions to balance. But let's take a look at a general reaction. And I want to use a specific kind of reaction that comes up frequently in this chapter, which is combustion. Combustion is essentially a reaction of oxygen. And you might remember in the lab when I demonstrated Bunsen burners, I talked about 2 types of combustion. One is complete combustion, which means oxygen reacts completely and as efficiently as possible. If it reacts with carbon, it only forms carbon dioxide. So here's an example of a combustion reaction. If you've ever heard of propane, like in a propane lighter, propane is a hydrocarbon. That means a substance that only is comprised of carbon and hydrogen. And it has the formula C3H8. When propane undergoes complete combustion with oxygen, it's going to form carbon dioxide and water. Now, there's some symbols I used in that first example equation, and I forgot to go back and explain myself a little bit. Do any of you happen to know, is propane a solid, a liquid, or a gas at room temperature?
Gas.
It's a gas. So that's what this symbol G I used up in the previous equation was. This is something known as a state symbol. So it indicates whether a substance is in solid, which would be S, liquid, which would be L, or gas, which would be G, form. There are a couple other state symbols that we'll see later. If you've had chemistry before, you might have encountered these. If you see the abbreviation PPT, that stands for precipitate, which if you've ever had any classes that dealt with weather, you know that precipitation in weather terms means water that comes out of the sky. But in chemistry, a precipitate is a solid that forms due to a chemical reaction. So PPT is another way of writing solid, but it's a special use of the solid. In other words, it only happens if a solid forms in the process of a chemical reaction. Question?
So is a salt a precipitate versus a solid?
Is a what?
A salt,
it depends. So a salt is a general term for our ionic compound. So there can be certain combinations of solutions where both solutions, well, I'm using the word solution. A solution is a type of homogeneous mixture where you got two substances that are completely mixed up together. And generally, when we use the word solution, we mean something that's overall liquid. So you can have two solutions, two different liquids that have things dissolved, completely mixed in with them. But once you combine the two solutions, a solid forms. And that solid could be a salt, but not all salts are automatically precipitates. So it's when it forms in the process of a chemical reaction, we call it a precipitate. So I'm just mentioning that in case some of you get interested and you look ahead at some of the other chapters. For right now, we're going to stick with the three main state symbols, though. S for solid, L for liquid, G for gas. So to make this a more complete equation, I'm going to fill in the fact that at room temperature, oxygen is a gas, carbon dioxide is a gas, water would be a liquid. Now, this equation's not balanced yet. There's not the same number of carbons, oxygens, and hydrogens on each side of the equation. So what do we do? Well, the most logical thing to do is to look where we only have one element on each side of the equation. And so maybe we would start with carbon. Because if you look on the left, carbon only occurs in one place. On the right, carbon only occurs in one place. So what could we do to balance out the carbon?
You
yes, some of you are giving me hand signals here, that we could put a 3 in front of carbon dioxide. Now, you might ask, well, can't we just put a 3rd in front of the propane? Okay, technically, yes, but what if we were talking about individual molecules? You can't have a 3rd of a molecule. So the standard way to write an equation is to not use fractions. Now, if we were talking about moles, then technically you could have fractions. But if I'm teaching you proper ways of writing equations, then for right now I'm going to say no fractions allowed. Okay, so we've got the carbons taken care of. But what about hydrogen? That's right, we could put a 4 and we would put it in front of water. Again, I'm not putting it inside the formula here. I'm not trying to change this to H8 because that's not the formula for water. Formula for water we leave alone. Any adjustment we make in terms of numbers has to go in front. So carbon and hydrogen, they both only showed up on one side of the equation. I'm sorry, they only showed up once on each side of the equation. So now we can go back and deal with oxygen. Well, we put some numbers on the right-hand side here already, so let's see if we can put something on the left to balance what we did on the right. So we've got 6 oxygens total from carbon dioxide, and we've got 4 oxygens total from water, because 3 in front of the carbon dioxide times 2, which is part of the formula, gives us 6, and then 4, which is in front of the water, times the 1 that's not written. We usually don't write the 1s. But that gives us a total of 10 oxygens. So what will we put on the left-hand side? A 5, that's right, because the oxygens occur in pairs. So that's an example of balancing a chemical reaction, which we'll certainly do more practice of next time. Okay, so now that we've got a balanced chemical reaction, here's a way that we can use that reaction equation. So let me write a quick problem based on this combustion of propane. Imagine 10 grams of propane. Just to remind you, that's C3H8. Undergo complete combustion in oxygen. The question is going to be, how many grams of carbon dioxide are produced? Well, how do we work a problem like that? There's 3 steps to this problem. This is how most of the problems in the chapter are going to work. The first thing is, we can't do anything with grams, because just like in the cheese sandwich example, unless we know how much mass is in each molecule of propane, we don't know the number of propanes that we have. We just know how much mass they've got. So the first thing we're going to have to do is go from mass to moles. But then there's another relationship that's there. That for every propane, for every 1, because there's an unwritten 1 in front of that, for every propane, there's 3 different carbon dioxides that get made. And that's that stoichiometry, which means ratio. The ratio of how much reactant there is to product. So we're going to have to use a factor there. Well, and that will give us moles of carbon dioxide. But what do we do then? Well, we got to convert from that number for moles back to mass again. So that's why I said that there are 3 steps to this process. So to answer this question, there are 3 conversions that must be done. So we're going to go from the mass of propane to the moles of propane. We're going to go from that to the moles of carbon dioxide, and we're going to go from that to the mass of carbon dioxide. So how are we going to do that? Well, that's exactly what these molar masses we had talked about are for. And that's why we had talked about the atomic mass unit, the mole, and the periodic table. Because if you look underneath each element in the periodic table, there's a decimal number there which represents its mass. And if you're talking about individual atoms, that's the mass in atomic mass units. If we're talking about moles, then that same number is used, but then it's the mass in grams. And if you're confused, why can there be two different units? Well, we're going to have that whole discussion again, because we'll have time to do that on Thursday. That was another question I didn't ask, because that whole question about what an atomic mass unit is, what a mole is, always ends up being confusing. Not just in this class, but even in the Chem 1, the full Chem majors class, that often ends up being a confusing topic. So we're going to tackle it again. But to move on with this problem, what I need is the molar mass of propane. So how do I come up with that molar mass? Well, there's three carbons. And each carbon, if we look on the periodic table, has an average mass of 12.01 grams. There's a few more digits that really go in there, but I probably already talked about how these are averages, and they also can vary in different parts of the planet. So I tend to only use two figures after the decimal point. I round a little bit. So that's for carbon. For hydrogen, there's six of them, and each one's got a mass of 1.01 grams. So if I multiply that out, then I get 6.06 from hydrogen. Oh, eight, sorry. I don't know how I skipped a groove like that. So 8.08 grams from hydrogen. Then I've got 36.03 from carbon. And that gives me a total of 44.11 grams propane per mole. So that's the molar mass, which means the mass of one mole. So we could do the same thing for carbon dioxide, because we want to know how much carbon dioxide do we make. So there we've only got one carbon. And if we look at oxygen, if you round it to two digits after the decimal point, that number ends up 16.00. So 32 from oxygen, 12.01 from carbon. That gives me, practically the same mass. Little tiny bit different. Not much different, though. So 44.01 grams of carbon dioxide per mole. So now I'm going to set up all the conversion factors in a row. And if you don't like doing it that way, yes, you can do each conversion factor individually. But way back centuries ago when I was a junior high student, our chem instructors told us to set everything up in one fraction to make it easier to see how units cancel out. So that's what I'm going to recommend that you all do here. So remember, unit conversion factors always work like this. It's what do you want versus what do you got. What goes on top is what do you want, because after everything cancels, you want the thing on top to be left over. Well, what do you got? That's going to go on the bottom because you want to cancel it out, because you know what you already got. In this case, we know how many grams of propane we have. So the problem tells us that we got 10 grams propane. And just to make it a fraction, we're going to put it over 1, because anything over 1 is itself. So now what do I do next? Well, I've got this unit conversion factor. And it tells me that there are 44.11 grams of propane per mole of propane. Wait, why did I put grams on the bottom? Because I want it to cancel out. But how did you know to put it on the bottom? Well, because I said that you had to move into moles, that we can't use mass to figure out chemical reactions. We need moles. So that's why I put grams on the bottom, because that automatically makes moles go on the top. So that's the first of our conversion factors. So this is mass of propane going to moles propane. If I said the phrase propane and propane accessories, would anybody get the reference? Okay, one or two of you are smiling. Don't think less of me because of it, and I know my accent doesn't reveal it very much, except when I'm mad, but I am originally from Texas. So there's a program called King of the Hill that was located not too terribly far from where I lived, and that's where that quote comes from. So, next conversion factor. Now we know how many numbers of propane that we've got. So now we need to figure out how much carbon dioxide is going to be made. That's what we use the chemical reaction equation for. So if I put that back up on here, we see one propane makes 3 carbon dioxides. So how are we going to write that out here? We want the propane to cancel. So 1 mole of propane ends up making 3 moles of carbon dioxide. That's how I'd write my conversion factor. So that's moles of propane going to moles carbon dioxide. Of course, the question didn't ask how many moles, it asked how many grams. So the last thing that we're going to do is say that in 1 mole of carbon dioxide, there's 44.01 grams of carbon dioxide. And that gets us from moles carbon dioxide to mass of carbon dioxide. So if I multiply everything out, 10 times 3 times 44.01 divided by 44.11, I get 29.93 grams carbon dioxide. We're totally out of time, so we'll continue talking about Chapter 5 on Thursday.